You're listening to the Live Out Loud podcast with River Wynn and Michelle Flamer.
Hello, good morning, everyone. Today we have a little bit of a different episode because Michelle is not with us today, but I am very excited because our guest today is a guest who was on with us early in the start of our podcast. So I'm really excited to have her back. And Alex Castro, welcome back.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be back and to share this time with you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think our topic today is going to be really beautiful for our audience and our listeners. I think they're going to get a lot from it. But before we start, so you are from LGBTQ mindfulness, and I know you kind of told us about it the first time you visited and were on the podcast with us. But for anyone who's new and hasn't heard that episode, could you kind of just like give a background on what is LGBTQ mindfulness, how it started, what you're doing with it?
Absolutely. So LGBTQ mindfulness is, the whole purpose of it is to create a safe and inclusive space for the LGBT community to come together and transform through mindfulness, connection, and community. And how it started was because in my own personal queer journey, I realized that most of the spaces that we have are around parties and bars. And while there's a time and place for everything, what about the people that want to connect a bit deeper and more authentically? So that's what my mission is, to create safe spaces, events that are nourishing for the mind, the soul, the body, and also do international retreats to, yeah, transform in community.
Yeah, I saw one of your recent posts about the retreats, and I just love that idea so much. And you also teach yoga, am I correct?
Yes. I'll do yoga events as well. The last yoga event I did was like a silent disco yoga, which was so fun.
Oh, how cool. That sounds super fun. So looking at mindfulness, you know, we have a lot of listeners who are kind of new on their journey, whether it's, you know, exploring their identity or they're coming out of relationships or whatever their healing journey is. And maybe they're not as familiar with mindfulness as a tool, and they don't know what that looks like. So if you were going to talk to someone who didn't understand what that meant, how would you explain and define it for them? What is mindfulness?
That's a loaded question. I'll give you the definition of what mindfulness means for me. And it's essentially the gift that we give ourselves when we're ready to be the witness of our own human experience. It's a way to, it's a way of being, you know. It's not something that you can wear on and off like a cap, but of course there's going to be times in our life where we're not 100% mindful all the time, but it's in the process of discovering that. That is mindfulness. And that's how we keep evolving in mindfulness. And it's truly a reflection of what is presently happening and accepting that without being overly reactive or overwhelmed with what's happening. And the beauty of mindfulness is that there's no right or wrong. It's accepting every moment as is and accepting it, observing it without criticism, judgment, condemnation. And one of the best examples that I can share with people on how to explain what mindfulness is, it's like a scientist observing an object under a microscope. And what you're looking at in the microscope is our experience. It's our thoughts. And whatever experience you may be having, looking into the microscope and accepting it is mindfulness, right? Mm. So the scientist, mindfulness is the microscope. And that's just like the best way I can literally put this in a picture of what mindfulness truly is. But the beauty about mindfulness too is that it's a quality that every human being already possesses. It's not something that you have to build up or find. It's within you. We just have to learn how to access it.
I love that definition so much. I like that way of looking at it. When you kind of began your journey with that, what did that look like for you? Kind of unpacking and finding that mindfulness and leaning into it. What was that like for you?
It's kind of just like any other skill, right? Like you kind of have to learn how to attain the skill. So when I got into this mindfulness journey, there were certain things that would help me improve my mindfulness. And one of those things was meditation. And once I got involved in meditation, I was able to develop that mindfulness muscle a lot more. And how did I know I was gaining mindfulness? It's because you start getting these aha moments. It's because you start being able to observe yourself and your experience without any judgment. It's almost like there's a third person and you're watching yourself, your behaviors, your patterns, the way you talk, and you start getting these aha moments or awareness of like, oh, this is what's happening. Oh, I see this. And it's beautiful because it also gives you a chance to make changes in your life versus just drive in an automatic, right? There's more conscious, there's more awareness to what you're doing versus just waking up, putting on the shirt and going to work.
Yeah, I feel like for me with mindfulness, there's a gentleness I've come into with myself. I know, I'll give an example, even this weekend, yesterday, I had something trigger up for me. And in the past, when something would trigger up for me, I would react versus respond and just have that gut emotional instinct. And I would just get so heightened. And now, you know, being mindful doesn't mean that triggers aren't going to happen and those experiences aren't going to happen. But I've noticed for myself that when the triggers happen, I'm able to, like you said, like that third person almost kind of step back and just evaluate and look at it kind of from the outside inward and have a gentleness with myself of, okay, how am I feeling? Why am I feeling this way? What's the root of this? What's the cause of this? And then give myself space and time to respond to it versus that reaction and getting heightened. So it's become a very gentle practice for me within my relationship to myself of not immediately judging myself as well for what I'm experiencing and feeling, and just really being able to pause and say, okay, this is what I'm experiencing. How do I want to handle this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think one of the most important aspects that you mentioned, it was that word reactive. Just because, you know, when we do get triggered, it's like this automatic response that we've been trained to have for our whole entire lives, right? Yeah. And it's almost like we're triggered and it's just an automatic reaction that we have to protect ourselves, to defend ourselves. But mindfulness is also being able to, there's this quote that says, between the response and the stimulants, there's a space, and in that space lies our freedom. Because we're able to make a different choice. And that's mindfulness. It's order to be in that space, which is uncomfortable.
So uncomfortable.
but it's allowing yourself to be in that discomfort and making a different choice. And every time we make a different choice, it's going to lead us to a different life.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, you know, at least to me, it feels like a befriending myself versus abandoning myself. And that feels really good to be in that space, even when it is uncomfortable. Like you said, it can be deeply uncomfortable, but knowing that I have the tools to check in with myself and then make decisions from a place of responding versus reacting, it's a powerful space to come to, I think. And so for someone who is kind of diving into this mindfulness and they're kind of new at exploring it, what are some gentle ways to kind of lean into that and explore that for themselves?
I would recommend to definitely learn more about the subject. And nowadays we live in a society where we have so much access to so much information, which could be a good thing or a bad thing. So I would probably get like a book on mindfulness. I would probably start following social media accounts that talk about mindfulness. I would probably find a place nearby that teaches meditation. I would probably start listening to podcasts about mindfulness and just dipping your toe into the water easily and gently. And once you start learning more about the subject, then start taking the action. Maybe set an alarm on your phone 3 times a day to just pause for 3 minutes, close your eyes, sit with yourself and breathe. Because I think that when we want to, when we want to do something, sometimes we'll try to like jump in the deep end and like overwhelm ourselves. Like, for example, if you're going to run a marathon, you shouldn't run 26 miles the next day. No, you start walking a mile. Then the next week, you'll probably run half a mile. Then the week after, maybe you'll run a complete mile. So it's step by step. So that's my biggest advice, like slowly, one step at a time. And with meditation, if you want to build your meditation practice, don't start with 20 minutes. If you've never meditated before, start with 5 minutes. Get more classes that teach meditation. Start involving yourself more in the subject and one step at a time. Like the journey of 1,000 smiles starts with one step. And I think something else that's like helpful is start focusing on one task without any distractions. I think nowadays we have the music going on, the podcast while we're washing the dishes. There's so much stimulation that we're used to that we think multitasking is okay, when in fact it's really not. We don't get things done as well as if we were focusing on one task at a time. So really, really focusing on washing the dishes. Just you immersed in that experience. Really being immersed with talking on the phone with your sister without looking at scrolling on Instagram while you're talking to her, or writing other text messages. Like truly being present in your everyday experiences is the pathway to be mindful.
Yeah, and that is uncomfortable, because I know, you know, I have some clients I work with who, when we start kind of working around that, like you're saying, you know, focusing in on one thing without the distractions, I feel like our systems are so trained and conditioned to just avoid being present with ourselves. And it seems like such a simple thing to say, like to be present with yourself, but it's really kind of difficult at first, because we have so much, you know, stimuli happening, and we're escaping ourselves constantly. We're putting our direction in so many different places. And so I love that example of like being with the dishes, because it's true. It's so easy to like throw on a podcast or call someone while you're doing the dishes. But, you know, those few moments, it can be a meditation in of itself, being with the dishes. It sounds like such a simple thing, but it's powerful.
Absolutely. And I think something else is like, when we start training ourselves to truly be present and mindful in our everyday tasks, our nervous system sometimes is at like an 8 of being stimulated. And truly just doing the dishes without music, without the podcast, without talking to someone is going to feel uncomfortable. And that's okay. You know, like regulating your nervous system down to a 2 or a 1, for some of us, it's completely out of our comfort zones, and it's going to feel weird, and it's going to feel uncomfortable, and there's going to be this anxiety. But sitting with the discomfort is what's going to help us get through it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I had a moment in time a couple of months ago where I worked really hard in the last year, especially to really regulate my nervous system. And I was in a really great place. And then I started having severe anxiety at night, and I couldn't sleep. And I went to my therapist and I was like, what do you think is going on? Because I have come to a place where my life is so peaceful. My nervous system feels so regulated, and I don't understand what's happening with this anxiety. And as we started working through it, it came to the point of like, it's actually my system reacting to the fact that I feel calm in my body, not knowing what to do with that. And that was an uncomfortable place where I had to sit with that and get used to having peace in my life. And that was a totally interesting and different experience. I don't know. Did you experience any moments like that in your journey with mindfulness?
Absolutely. And I remember having this moment where I was meditating a lot, mm-hmm. and I started, because meditation gives you inner peace. So I had this inner peace within me, and I was just so calm. And I kept finding myself wanting to stimulate my nervous system through caffeine. I was like, I need a cup of coffee. And I was like, but I just had a cup of coffee, but I need another cup, because I wanted to get back to that 8, because I was so uncomfortable in that 2. And I started finding myself like, trying to, you know, get things to get me to that heightened state. And I was like, but that's when the awareness came in, the mindfulness came in, and was like, oh, I'm just uncomfortable with this peace and this calm that I'm not used to, that I want to exasperate and go to that anxiety level 8. So it's like teaching yourself and your nervous system on how to be okay with the peace, how to be okay with the calm. And for everyone, it's different, right? Like and those patterns obviously like stem back and root back from our childhood on what our environment was like, because we want to keep ourselves in that comfort zone, but sometimes those comfort zones aren't healthy for us. So stepping out of that into something different.
Yeah, I know for me, childhood was very chaotic. And so for me, busyness and chaos was actually more comfortable than having a slow pace of life and being at peace and having less to do in my day. And so when I very intentionally this winter, I set aside a couple of months and I deep dive. I said, okay, I'm slowing down. I'm taking everything out of my to-do list unless it absolutely has to be done. And I am just going to be with myself and be with my life and be with my internal world. And it was really uncomfortable because my system is so much more comfortable with being insanely busy and having chaos and on the go all the time. So that was really a beautiful space. And after experiencing that, coming out of that, I now have a new baseline to go back to. When I start to feel anxious, I'm like, okay, I need to slow back down again. It doesn't feel good to be busy. And that was a really cool space for me to come to.
Yeah. And I think like that resonates a lot with me just because I'm someone that's always busy as well. And it's like retraining myself on what void am I trying to, or how am I coping with this busyness? Like, what is the root cause of me always wanting to be busy and like coping with the busyness? So it's realizing that if I'm always busy, like you said, I need to be intentional about clearing my schedule and learning how to be bored, learning how to sit in the bed and just not do anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I had complained to a friend prior to taking this time that I was like, I haven't read a book for enjoyment in a really long time. And in that like pause, I called it my wintering this year, my pause, my wintering. I came out of it having the space and time to just read a novel for the sake of just enjoyment. And that felt so good.
I bet.
Yeah. So mindfulness doesn't apply to just like our daily lives, right? It can apply to a lot of areas of life. And I know you work as a coach as well too. You work with people one-on-one. Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm curious, how does it apply, mindfulness apply to dating and relationships? Like, how do you put that into the context of dating and relationships?
The most important aspect of being mindful when you date is knowing who you are, what your patterns are, what are you looking for, what is your attachment style, with whom are you most compatible with. If you don't know who you are, what you want, who you're most compatible with, you're dating mindlessly. Because clarity is power. Without clarity, we struggle with indecisiveness, lack of direction, which can hinder us in making the wrong decisions when we're dating. Because a successful, healthy relationship is a set of good decisions. And in my personal experience, I come from an anxious attachment style. And when I didn't have the awareness or the mindfulness, I thought that the butterflies were what you were supposed to feel, the chase, the romance that you see in Disney movies and in the novelas or soap operas when I grew up watching. The push and pull was what love and romance was all about. But once I started to read about attachment styles, learn about dating, I learned that it's forget the spark. You know, the spark often leads to relationship burnout and it's usually a trauma bond. And instead, it's reteaching ourselves how to be mindful of what's good for us, which is usually the slow burn. You know, someone who's not initially as excited is usually the person that makes a great long-term partner. So through therapy, you know, I started learning more about my patterns, my attachment styles. And I realized that most of them weren't healthy when I was dating, and being mindful of reteaching myself how to like the correct person, how to like the secure attached person, which is usually the boring, stable, consistent person, because they're not giving your brain these like dopamine hits of inconsistency. And I was actually listening to Logan Uri last night, and she's a dating coach and behavioral scientist. And she mentions how, you know, most of the dynamics between like anxious and avoidance, which is kind of what's left in the dating pool, because all the secure people are married. It's kind of like how you're like addicted to a slot machine at casinos because you're so unpredictable and you're waiting for that next hit of dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's being able to identify what hasn't been working and what I need to do differently and making a different choice for a different outcome. But I cannot make a different choice if I don't have the awareness or mindfulness around it.
Yeah, I relate to so much of that. I know for me in my dating experience, it's really come down to having the awareness to identify my patterns in dating so that I don't continue to make those same choices, but then also understanding why I had those patterns. Where did they come from? Why was I making those choices? And for me, and I think for a lot of people, it's true that, you know, we are looking in dating for the things that we experienced in childhood. You know, we're basing a lot of our dating patterns around our childhood experiences of love. And for me, definitely, I came from that like more anxious style as well, where both of my parents were emotionally unavailable. So I was always chasing after the approval, trying to get someone to choose me. And when I got very intentional about looking at my dating patterns and realized that, it changed a lot for me, because now it's not about, does this person choose me? It's, do I actually like this person? And why do I like them? And what are they bringing to my life that is adding to my life versus me seeking something and chasing after something? So for me, that mindfulness aspect really brought more peace into my dating life. And I'm looking forward to putting that into more practice.
Yeah, and I think also like you said, recognizing our patterns, where they come from, and being mm-hmm. mindful about the actions that we're making moving forward in our dating lives, because I can know my patterns. I can know the type of person that's not good for me. But if I keep doing the same actions of continuing to chase, continuing to seek the approval, like, it's one thing to know and it's one thing to apply. I love the saying that says, knowledge is not power. Knowledge in action is power. I could read all the books about it, but if I'm not putting in the action to make a different choice, nothing is going to change. And in my own personal experience, even if I had the knowledge, I would still want the unavailable person. I would still want the chase until I was like, okay, I need to make a different choice because I'm getting the same result. Mm-hmm. So now when I meet someone and they're not responding back, they're not consistent, that's like my first red flag. It's like, nope, it's not here. But it's stepping away versus continuing to text a person and continuing, it's putting in like different actions. And I think also being mindful about the list that we make about people, because I think nowadays it's almost like the list that we have is like shopping for a partner, like a pair of Bluetooth headphones. I want this color, this battery life. And we start thinking that we can shop for a partner in the same way. And it doesn't work that way, because as humans, we're so complex. You know, the person that is going to make us happy in the long term is very rarely the person that you thought you should be with. And you think you know what you want, but actually we're wrong. And the older that we get, the more we think we have it figured out, and the more we exclude great partners because we think we need to find someone like ourselves. And the better attitude in dating is to date like a scientist. Date someone who's different from the person that you think you should date and see if you could fall for them. If you date for someone that is not your type, that's you making a different choice, which will lead you to a different result. And research has shown from Logan Uri that those are way more often the relationships that work. So it's like when people come and say like they have this checklist about this person, it's like, oh, okay, let's go find it on LinkedIn. Let's go find this person on LinkedIn and let's search for them. No, that's not the approach. It's let's do the work to actually figure out who's going to bring the best side of you. And there has been research correlated with long-term relationships, and it's who you are around that person and what side of you do they bring out that leads to this long-term relationship. And something that I want to share with your listeners that I think is really helpful is Logan Uri has these post 8-8 questions that we should ask ourselves after dates, and they're so helpful. And the point of these questions is that if you go on a date with a checklist, you're going on a job interview and you're a lot more judgmental and critical. Are they ambitious enough for me? Are they funny enough for me? And you're going through this checklist that usually takes us out of the being present experience. So the post 8-8 questions teach you how to tune into the experience. And I'm going to share the questions with you.
Yeah, so, I'd love to. Yeah,
the questions are, how did my body feel during the date?
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah.
Do I feel more energized or de-energized than I did before the date? Is there something about them that I'm curious about? Did they make me laugh? Did I feel heard? Did I feel attractive in their presence? Did I feel captivated, bored, or something in between? And the last one is my favorite. What side of me did they bring out? Because whoever that person brings out in you is the person you will be for the rest of your life in that relationship. And don't you want to be happy, secure, desire the hilarious version of yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that so much. Michelle and I recently were talking on the podcast about the list making, because I had spoken with a dating coach about list making, and I think that's a pretty common topic. You know, people make your list to manifest your partner, and you hear a lot about it. But you see a lot of people making lists, like you were saying, like that checklist of like attributes and what do they do and, you know, who they are as a person. But I actually have a list, but my list is written from the point of view, which I like these questions, because it's, how do I want to feel in a relationship? How do I want to feel with this person? So my list is written from that perspective. And then I've also gone through that list and asked myself, do I do this for myself? Do I make myself feel this way? Am I able to be my full self? Am I giving this to myself? And I love those questions, because that concept of like, how do you feel, is being in your body, being in your internal world, and checking in and saying, does this person make me feel how I want to feel in relationship? And that's so powerful, because I think a lot of us, for me with the anxiety piece, looking back at my patterns and my relationships, all I felt was anxiety. And the people I was dating was bringing out the worst side of me, where I was anxious and dramatic and clingy, and that didn't feel good. I don't want to feel that way. So thank you for sharing those questions, because I love those. That's a really great resource.
Absolutely. Yeah. Once I heard them, I was like, I wish more people had this. And she's just amazing. Logan Uri, all the research that she's done, she works for Hinge, and her book, I think it's like How Not to Die Alone. I think is the book's name. But if your listeners are on a quest to date and find resources, that would be a really great resource for them to read, because she's a scientist, so there's a lot of science based and research on what she mentions and what she does, and it just makes sense. Like, if you've been single for a really long time, you know, it's time to make different choices to get a different result.
Absolutely. So I wanted to talk to you also about your retreats, because like I said at the beginning of the show, you posted recently a retreat in Colombia, which I got very excited about because I love Colombia. So tell me about the retreats. You know, what started them? What do you do with the retreats? Who are they for?
Absolutely. So everything in my company is for the LGBTQA plus community. And the retreats are just like a safe healing space for like-minded individuals that want to come together and truly transform and have a life-changing experience. This one in Colombia is very special to my heart because I am Colombian and I think it's an amazing country. The culture is so welcoming and loving. And I also wanted to expand a little bit in this retreat, adventure meeting mindfulness, because I think that when we mention the word mindfulness, people think of a monk in a mountaintop isolated by themselves. And while, yes, I have done that and it has been really helpful and has healed me in certain ways, also truly enriching yourself and the joy of life with community has also been my biggest healing. So I really wanted to create a retreat where it's community oriented, where we're exploring a different culture, where we're having fun, where we're in nature as well. And then towards the end of the retreat, like it's half and half. So half of the retreat at the end, it's like all the mindfulness stuff, waking up and meditating, yoga, doing some ceremonies in Colombia, Selva Minca, even though we're still going to be meditating every day when we wake up and like sit as a group. But yeah, it's a lot. It's different aspects mixed together to be able to transform in different ways.
I love that. I especially love the aspect of nature, because I know for me on my journey with mindfulness, nature's a big piece of that. Every weekend, I am very intentional about setting aside time to go hiking and just be out in nature, get my feet on the ground. And I think there's so much wisdom that can come from being in nature and soaking that up and leaning into it. So I love that you're adding that aspect to it as well. And having been to Colombia, it's just so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
I literally tell them, I'm like, when you guys get back, I want you all to think that Colombia is like the best country in the world.
That was my experience. I went there for 2 weeks when I was in college. My cousin was there teaching English for 2 weeks. And, you know, it was so interesting because everyone told me before I went, oh, it's such a dangerous place to go. Don't go there. And it was probably my favorite travel destination because everyone was so sweet, so friendly, so kind. I never felt unsafe. The food was amazing. The nature was gorgeous. Like, what a beautiful place to go.
Totally. And I think people that do say like, be careful, it's so dangerous. I mean, I'm in San Francisco, walk by the Tenderloin and you're just going to feel as unsafe as like anywhere else, you know? Well,
when I was in Colombia, the irony was that a shooting happened in Portland where I lived at the time at a mall that I worked at while I was in Colombia. And I was like, okay, you know, you have to be careful no matter where you go. Just be mindful of your surroundings.
Exactly.
Yeah. So is that the only retreat you have planned for this year? Or are there other ones coming up?
Yes, that is the only retreat I have. 2025, I do have some in mind, but once I have a clear gauge on them, I'll definitely share with you and your listeners again, because I'm sure that's not going to be the first time I'm on the podcast. I mean,
I agree. Yeah, we love having you back. Are you doing any smaller, like in the US meetups?
So what I have planned right now is I'm going to India for a month, April 26th to May 29th, to deepen my spiritual practice and my yoga practice. And then once I get back, I'm going to do a Pride Wellness event in San Francisco, June 9th. And after that, in July, I might be doing something around bringing a guest speaker to talk about finances, because I think we don't talk about that enough.
No, we don't.
And yeah, in August, I have a queer friendships event again in San Francisco, but it's mostly based out in San Francisco. But the good news is that in the near future, I'm going to start expanding to New York and hopefully San Diego. So definitely keep out for that.
I love that so much. And if our listeners are visiting San Francisco and they want to connect, how can they like find you? What's the best way for people to connect with you?
So I'm most active on Instagram. They can follow my account at LGBTQ Mindfulness. I'm also on TikTok at Alex Castro with 2 X and 2 O's. And that's where I'm posting most of my events.
Okay. Okay. Awesome. Alex, thank you so much for coming back on. I know Michelle was sad she couldn't be here today, but we're going to have you back on again. I'm so sure.
Thank you so much for having me. And this was such a delight. And I hope everything that I mentioned is useful. And yeah, follow us on Instagram for mindfulness content.
Yeah. Appreciate you. Have an amazing day.
If you enjoyed this episode today, be sure to subscribe and share, because what do we say, baby?
Sharing is caring.